Canon Albrecht's Scrapbook by M.R. James. St. Bertrand de Comminges is a decayed town on the spurs of the Pyrenees, not very far from Toulouse, and still nearer to Bagne de Lucien. It was the site of a bishopric until the Revolution, and has a cathedral which is visited by a certain number of tourists. In the spring of 1883, an Englishman arrived at this old-world place. I can hardly dignify it with the name of city, for there are not 1,000 inhabitants. He was a Cambridge man who had come specially from Toulouse to see St. Bertrand's Church, and had left two friends, who were less keen archaeologists than himself, in their hotel at Toulouse under promise to join him on the following morning. Half an hour at the church would satisfy them, and all three could then pursue their journey in the direction of Oak. But our Englishman had come early on the day in question, and proposed to himself to fill a notebook, and to use several dozens of plates in the process of describing and photographing every corner of the wonderful church that dominates the little hill of Comminges. In order to carry out this design satisfactorily, it was necessary to monopolize the verger of the church for the day. The verger, or sacristan, I prefer the latter appellation, inaccurate as it may be, was accordingly sent for by the somewhat brusque lady who keeps the inn of the Chapeau Rouge. And when he came, the Englishman found him an unexpectedly interesting object of study. It was not in the personal appearance of the little, dry, wizened old man that the interest lay, for he was precisely like dozens of other church guardians in France, but in a curious furtive, or rather hunted and oppressed air which he had. He was perpetually half-glancing behind him. The muscles of his back and shoulders seemed to be hunched in a continual nervous contraction, as if he were expecting every moment to find himself in the clutch of an enemy. The Englishman hardly knew whether to put him down as a man haunted by a fixed delusion, or as one oppressed by a guilty conscience, or as an unbearably henpecked husband. The probabilities, when reckoned up, certainly pointed to the last idea, but still the impression conveyed was that of a more formidable persecutor even than a termagant wife. However, the Englishman, let us call him Denniston, was soon too deep in his notebook and too busy with his camera to give more than an occasional glance to the sacristan. Whenever he did look at him, he found him at no great distance, either huddling himself back against the wall or crouching in one of the gorgeous stalls. Denniston became rather fidgety after a time, mingled suspicions that he was keeping the old man from his déjeuner, that he was regarded as likely to make away with St. Bertrand's ivory crozier or with the dusty stuffed crocodile that hangs over the font, began to torment him. "Won't you go home?" he said at last. "I'm quite well able to finish my notes alone. You can lock me in if you like. I shall want at least 2 hours more here, and it must be cold for you, isn't it?" "Good heavens!" said the little man, whom the suggestion seemed to throw into a state of unaccountable terror. "Such a thing cannot be thought of for a moment. Leave monsieur alone in the church? No, no, 2 hours, 3 hours, all will be the same to me. I have breakfasted. I am not at all cold, with many thanks to monsieur."
"Very well, my little man," quoth Denniston to himself. "You've been warned, and you must take the consequences." Before the expiration of the 2 hours, the stalls, the enormous dilapidated organ, the choir screen of Bishop John de Molian, the remnants of glass and tapestry, and the objects in the treasure chamber had been well and truly examined. The sacristan still keeping at Denniston's heels, and every now and then whipping round as if he'd been stung, when one or other of the strange noises that trouble a large empty building fell on his ear. Curious noises they were, sometimes. "Once," Denniston said to me, "I could have sworn I heard a thin metallic voice laughing high up in the tower. I darted an inquiring glance at my sacristan. He was white to the lips.
It is he. It is no one. The door is locked,
was all he said. And we looked at each other for a full minute. Another little incident puzzled Denniston a good deal. He was examining a large, dark picture that hangs behind the altar, one of a series illustrating the miracles of St. Bertrand. The composition of the picture is well nigh indecipherable, but there is a Latin legend below, which is translated thus: How St. Bertrand delivered a man whom the devil long sought to strangle. Denniston was turning to the sacristan with a smile and a jocular remark of some sort on his lips, but he was confounded to see the old man on his knees, gazing at the picture with the eye of a suppliant in agony, his hands tightly clasped, and a rain of tears on his cheeks. Denniston naturally pretended to have noticed nothing, but the question would not away from him. Why should a daub of this kind affect anyone so strongly? He seemed to himself to be getting some sort of clue to the reason of the strange look that had been puzzling him all the day. The man must be a monomaniac. But what was his monomania? It was nearly 5 o'clock. The short day was drawing in, and the church began to fill with shadows, while the curious noises, the muffled footfalls and distant talking voices that had been perceptible all day, seemed, no doubt because of the fading light and the consequently quickened sense of hearing, to become more frequent and insistent. The sacristan began for the first time to show signs of hurry and impatience. He heaved a sigh of relief when the camera and notebook were finally packed up and stowed away, and hurriedly beckoned Denniston to the western door of the church under the tower. It was time to ring the Angelus. A few pulls at the reluctant rope, and the great bell Bertrand, high in the tower, began to speak, and swung her voice up among the pines and down the valleys, loud with mountain streams, calling the dwellers on those lonely hills to remember and repeat the salutation of the angel to her whom he called blessed among women. With that, a profound quiet seemed to fall for the first time that day upon the little town, and Denniston and the sacristan went out of the church. On the doorstep, they fell into conversation.
Monsieur seemed to interest himself in the old choir books in the sacristy.
Undoubtedly. I was going to ask you if there were a library in the town.
No, monsieur. Perhaps there used to be one belonging to the chapter, but it is now such a small place.
Here came a strange pause of irresolution, as it seemed. Then with a sort of plunge he went on,
But if monsieur is amateur de vieux livres, I have at home something that might interest him. It is not 100 yards.
All at once, Denniston's cherished dreams of finding priceless manuscripts in untrodden corners of France flashed up, to die down again the next moment. It was probably a stupid missal of Plantin's printing, about 1580. Where was the likelihood that a place so near Toulouse would not have been ransacked long ago by collectors? However, it would be foolish not to go. He would reproach himself forever after if he refused. So they set off. On the way, the curious irresolution and sudden determination of the sacristan recurred to Denniston, and he wondered in a shamefaced way whether he was being decoyed into some purlieu to be made away with as a supposed rich Englishman. He contrived, therefore, to begin talking with his guide, and to drag in a rather clumsy fashion, the fact that he expected 2 friends to join him early the next morning. To his surprise, the announcement seemed to relieve the sacristan at once of some of the anxiety that oppressed him.
"That is well," he said quite brightly. "That is very well. Monsieur will travel in company with his friends. They will be always near him. It is a good thing to travel thus in company. Sometimes.
The last word appeared to be added as an afterthought, and to bring with it a relapse into gloom for the poor little man. They were soon at the house, which was one rather larger than its neighbors, stone-built, with a shield carved over the door, the shield of Albrecht de Molian, a collateral descendant, Denniston tells me, of Bishop John de Molian. This Albrecht was a canon of Comminges from 1680 to 1701. The whole place bore, as does the rest of Comminges, the aspects of decaying age. Arrived on his doorstep, the sacristan paused a moment.
"Perhaps," he said, "perhaps, after all, monsieur has not the time."
"Not at all. Lots of time. Nothing to do till tomorrow. Let us see what it is you've got." The door was opened at this point, and a face looked out, a face far younger than the sacristan's, but bearing something of the same distressing look, only here it seemed to be the mark not so much of fear for personal safety as of acute anxiety on behalf of another. Plainly, the owner of the face was the sacristan's daughter, and, but for the expression I have described, she was a handsome girl enough. She brightened up considerably on seeing her father accompanied by an able-bodied stranger. A few remarks passed between father and daughter, of which Denniston caught only these words, said by the sacristan.
"He was laughing in the church."
Words which were answered only by a look of terror from the girl.